Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Radio broadcast. My name is Kevin Swanson. I'm broadcasting from our basement out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado, where we homeschool our children. We bring a message of truth and relationships on this program to a lost and lonely world. Our world is characterized as being lost without truth and lonely without relationships, which means that our institutional form of life that has infiltrated the way we do church, the way we do school, the way we do work, the way we do everything, we live in the loneliest time in probably all of human history because man has segregated himself from relationships. He's out of relationships, but man, he's got 1,200 Facebook friends who haven't defriended him yet until tomorrow. Well, friends, we're bringing a program that encourages the idea of absolute truth and relationships, and we bring it back to a lost and lonely world. And one of the ways in which we do that is by promoting home education. Home education has the potential to teach God's truth in the womb of relationships as we walk by the way, as we rise up, as we lie down. And we call it discipleship. It's God's concept of education. It's centered in the home. It happens with mothers and fathers. Just look it up. Deuteronomy 6:7, Ephesians 6:4, the book of Proverbs. Pretty much every single text you can find relating to children draws parents into the equation. Home education has some downsides, though. Relationships can implode. And the fallout can be worse than if you didn't homeschool at all. We see that a fair amount. Now, sadly, as pastors and counselors and people who have to work with people who have tried relationships and been found wanting in the process, we find that lots and lots and lots of family relationships do blow up because they come into close proximity in a homeschool environment or even a marriage. And marriage is blowing up all the time, too, so this is not unusual. Homeschooling can open some cans of worms, and that challenges our paradigms and tests our faith big time. Sometimes it's easier to keep the covers on the sofas of our lives, keep the cows out of the barn, because you keep the cows out of the barn and your kids out of your life, you're going to have a clean barn. You'll have a clean life. It'll be really, really, really cleaned up. But then again, how much profit without cows? How much profit without relationships? Well, the second issue with home education, again, we're saying that home education is not the panacea, the cure-all for all ills, but home education can be the Wild West of education. You have the Wiccan homeschoolers, you got the humanist homeschoolers, you got communist homeschoolers. So it's a Wild West. I mean, when you walk into a homeschooling conference, you're going to expect just about anything because, hey, there is no more monopoly of thought. And that's undermined by the home education movement. When you decentralize to the point where you have individual parents choosing the worldview by which they will educate their children, you're going to get the Wild West of home education or of education. And it's going to be quite a variety. Therefore, we're not saying that that the Wiccans shouldn't have the right to home educate. We're not saying the humanists and the communists should not have the right to home educate. But we are saying that at least we're released a bit from the monopoly of thought that comes from a public school system rooted in a materialistic, naturalistic way of thinking about science and history and so forth. That is, they don't allow for God to enter. There's no supernatural in a naturalistic, materialistic worldview. So we like the fact we're released from all of that. Homeschooling can also be so unstructured that children create bad habits, grow slothful, and become inefficient at following through on deadlines and so forth. So we find that homeschoolers oftentimes wind up being even less disciplined in terms of structure and terms of follow through than their counterparts from public and private schools. Homeschool boys especially can have the problem of slothfulness. Not that slothfulness doesn't affect boys from private and public schools as well. Also, the husband-wife relationship can be even more strained within the homeschool environment. See, the bottom line here is that without a robust life of faith and repentance, your marriage, your homeschool will not be successful. You've got to have faith. In order to do this, you're stepping off the cliff of tests, of trials, of difficulty if you choose to homeschool your children because you're going to be doing things that are going to be extremely difficult. You're going to be testing yourself. You're going to be testing your kids. You're going to be testing your relationships. You're going to be testing your ability to nurture the hearts of your children. You see, we get beyond the idea of nurturing the minds of our children to nurturing the hearts of our children, and that's what makes it so challenging within the homeschool environment. Okay, with despite all of these difficulties, and despite the fact there are homeschools that don't make it, and there are homeschools that erupt in a severe murder, as we saw in a eastern Colorado town just a couple of months ago, despite the fact there are problems with homeschooling, homeschooling can produce very good fruit. I mean, there are broken relationships, bitter kids, rebels, murders, etc. Of course. Of course there's going to be that. We live in a sinful world. But there is very good fruit, some strong academic performance, some good family relationships, incredibly happy families. Hey, we have generational continuity in my family, second generation, third generation homeschoolers. Examples of faith growing with each successive generation. I believe that's possible. And it can happen as the hearts of the fathers turn to the children and children to the fathers. Well, friends, how do we accomplish all of this? We do it by faith. We do it by encouraging fathers to get involved. That's basic. Ultimately, God holds fathers responsible. Ephesians 6:4, fathers, bring your children up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. God ultimately holds fathers responsible for the training, for the education department in their families. Now, they can delegate, as any manager can to employees within their department, but still the CEO of the universe is going to hold that manager, that father, responsible for what happens in the education department of his home. That's why we encourage fathers to step up to the plate, engage the vision, oversee what's going on, and encourage and motivate and do everything you can to encourage the faith and strengthen the faith of your wife and your children. Nevertheless, still, moms are doing about 95% of the work within the homeschool. Therefore, moms need that encouragement. They need the prayers. They need time in the Word themselves. They need the love and guidance and support of their dedicated husbands in the task. When all of this comes together, and by the grace of God, and by faith in a God who doesn't let us down, friends, God blesses, He blesses, He blesses. We trust in that as we launch out into this huge endeavor we call home education. Well, in just a moment, we want to encourage the homeschool moms that are doing the work in the trenches. Anita Mellett will be with me on the Generations broadcast in just one moment. Anita Mellett, she's author of a new book, School is Where the Home Is, 180 Devotions for Parents. Be back in just a moment with Anita. Stay with me. Folks, believe it or not, this is our eighth year on the air. Our first broadcast was October 3rd, 2003. From the beginning, we produced the program as a commercial endeavor, and then 2 years ago decided to rely entirely on listener support. And by God's grace, we're making some progress. But this is fundraising month. Each year, we target 100 sponsors to keep us on the air for one more year. And we're hoping that by God's grace, we will be on the air for one more year. If you find the ideas helpful on this program, if you receive some discipleship, some encouragement yourself, please consider supporting our program. We know that we have about 500,000 listeners a year from 80 countries around the world. We have people in Sweden, Ireland, Australia, England, many of whom have no other encouragement for the kind of ideas they get on this program. But they get it here on Generations. They're encouraged every day by what they hear on this radio broadcast from my basement out on the eastern plains of Colorado. So if you listen to the program or watch us, you know what we're all about. Family, fathers, freedom, faith, home-based discipleship, family-based economies, relationships in a cold and lonely world, worldview and discipleship, truth and relationships, a vision for future generations. That's what we're all about. And we are so privileged to get the very best speakers, pastors, fathers, Christian leaders in the country, talk about worldview and family issues. Folks like Mike Farris, Ken Ham, Vody Baucham, Al Mohler's been here, Paul David Tripp, R.C. Sproul, Phyllis Schlafly, David Noble, Tim Challies, Nancy Percy, Wayne Grudem, Sam Crabtree, and Dave. Dave Buhner, he's a regular on the program. Well, folks, we don't get a lot of psychobabble flim-flam on this program, because we don't want to raise up more weaky-weaky fruits for generations to come. Our desire is a vision that will cast for future generations and will encourage and inspire many generations and hopefully rebuild faith, family, and freedom during the breakdown of Western civilization. That's what we're doing out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado. If you'd like to support the program, just simply go to our website, kevinswanson.com, and click on Support the Program and join our fundraising campaign for May. Our target is 100 sponsors for the month of May. 100 sponsors for the month of May at $10 a month, $20 a month, or $50 a month, or even a one-time donation. Friends, if you would like to support the program, kevinswanson.com. That's kevinswanson.com. And welcome back to the Generations Radio Broadcast, friends. Kevin Swanson with you today. And we want to talk about homeschooling, the challenges, the difficulties. We'd love to sit around and talk about how homeschoolers score at the 89th percentile, 39 percentile points above the national average. They're doing very, very, very well. Thank you very much. But it's not that easy. It can be a challenge. I mean, we're talking about relationships here. We're talking about being in the same room with your children for hour after hour after hour and working with them on various aspects of their academics as well as their character. And with me to talk about this is Anita Mellett. She's author of the new book, School is Where the Home Is. And this is a brand new book just coming out. Anita, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kevin. It's good to be with you.
Now, you're a homeschooling mom. You've been at it for 8 years. And so you have lived through this. In fact, you lead a homeschool encouragement group. So you know some of the challenges that homeschooling moms are facing out there.
I do.
And what kind of challenges are we talking about here? I mean, just kind of a big picture. What is it like? Is it different being a homeschooling mom than, say, your average soccer mom out there?
I think so, because, you know, we have the responsibility for our kids' education.
Mm.
And that, to me, overwhelmed me when I first started homeschooling.
Mm.
And, you know, there's always the balance between home, school, church, activities. And for me, at least, at the back of my mind always plays the question, am I doing enough?
Yeah.
Should I be doing more? Am I giving my child everything she or he needs?
Mm.
And, you know, I realized 4 years ago when I attended my first ever homeschool encouragement meeting that I wasn't the only mom who faced those questions. There were other moms, too. And that was just an epiphany for me.
Mm. Wow.
That other moms also face challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, we have our joys and we have our triumphs. It's a wonderfully rewarding path. But, you know, the daily steps to get to that point can sometimes be challenging.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the Christian life, because the Christian life is never a life of perfection. We never achieve the levels we would like to achieve, whether it be in our relationships, in our economic situation, or what have you. But that's the way life is. And I think with your children, you love them so much. You want the very best for them. You're willing to sacrifice just about anything for them. And yet you see that there's no way you can be everything to them in order to, you know, accomplish everything you'd want for them. So therefore, I guess what we're saying is inevitably you've got to go back to God for this.
So true. And I am so grateful for the cross.
Yes.
If it wasn't for the cross, I mean, there would be no hope, because, you know, homeschooling really brings me face to face with my shortcomings.
Yes.
You know, and I'm so thankful that, I mean, it's taken me 8 years to learn this, Kevin, but it's okay for me to mess up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm human.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a God who is bigger than my mistakes, and he's a God of hope and redemption. And when I go before him in repentance and kneel at the cross and ask for mercy, he forgives and he can transform.
Yes.
And it's okay for me to be vulnerable with my children as well, and to go back to my daughter and say, you know, I messed up. Would you forgive me? It just helps so much.
Yes.
To be open with them.
How does your daughter respond to that when you turn to her and say, I raised my voice. I was angry. I was impatient. What does she say? How does she respond?
The first time it happened, Kevin, she just kind of looked at me. She was shocked. Her head jerked up from the table and she went, what? And I sat down with her and I said, you know, Mommy was really out of place by getting upset with you.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sorry. Would you please forgive me? And, you know, that opened the door for her to see me as a human being in need of God's grace.
Yes.
And it's actually helped us in better communication with each other.
Mm. And in fact, it's good for her to see that, because she suddenly realizes that she's in the same boat, you're in the same boat, and so, you know, hey, we can get along. This is going to work. If Mom can do this, I can do this.
Yes.
Mm. And that I think is really where those relationships begin to form. Really, I think the best relationships form through conflicts. If you can make it through the conflicts, I call them the rapids of life. If you can make them through the number threes and number fours in the rapids of life, you know, as the waters cool off a little bit, you know, relationships are stronger for the test.
That's true.
Well, let's talk about the big issues that homeschooling moms face, and we talked about one of them. What are some of the others that you think affect your average homeschooling mom out there?
Well, you know, judging from what I've heard in the homeschool encouragement group I lead, and just, you know, going from my own personal struggles, constantly second-guessing myself, comparing myself to other moms and other homeschools and other kids and where they're at.
That's incredibly common. People always want to what's wrong with comparison? I mean, obviously it's hard to do a one-for-one when every child is different. But why do we do this? Why do we compare?
You know, Kevin, I thought it was unique to me. I don't think it is. And, you know, I think from my point of view, it's because I want so hard to do the right thing.
Okay.
I want to be the best homeschool mom there is.
Mm.
And for me, it's just constantly realizing that the one who called me is also the one who will empower me.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to keep that in the forefront of my school every day.
Mm.
And that's really hard, you know, especially when I have a toddler pulling books off the table and I have a tween who, you know, who's struggling with math or getting frustrated with drawing a map. And it's just hard.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
for me, it's, I have to train myself to kind of step back and say, okay, God, come, be a part of this homeschool in a practical way.
Mm.
I think also to realize that some people have better gifts in some areas than others. I mean, there's 100 different gifts out there, and if one person is gifted in gift A, B, C, and D, and you're gifted in E, F, G, and H, you don't want to put pressure on yourself to just, okay, I'm good at E, F, G, and H, but now I want to be just as good as they are at A, B, C, and D. That's just not going to happen because God didn't gift us all the same way. And we've got to remember that God really holds us accountable for ourselves, and he doesn't compare us to others. Yeah. Well, how about perfectionism? You mentioned perfectionism in your book, School is Where the Home Is, as well. And boy, is that a deadly trap. Talk about that. What's the perfectionist look like? Is that you? Are you somewhat perfectionistic at points?
I am. I am. And for me, it's trying to do everything perfectly to earn approval.
Huh.
See, I grew up in an Indian home in India, actually.
Okay.
And my father, I very rarely heard him say, you did a good job, because I was just supposed to do as was expected of me, which was perform at the maximum level possible.
Mm.
So when I did that, I never heard from him because I was doing what was expected. But when I didn't, I heard from him.
Wow.
And, you know, I think that, and I'm not blaming him at all. He was a wonderful, godly man.
Mm.
And in retrospect now, I see how much he molded me to be the person I am today.
Mm.
But I still sense at the back of my mind that push for approval to do the best, not for God, but to be recognized by other people.
Mm.
So for me, perfectionism also comes back to, what are my motives? Am I doing it for the Lord? Which is why the verse I quoted, do it unto the Lord, is what frees me from that perfectionism.
Mm. You know what's funny is if you talk about your past, just 5 days ago, I ran into a homeschooling dad from India, and he's got 8 or 9 children. He was raised by a good, godly Christian pastor in India, and this guy was a godly pastor himself. He said his father had the same issue. He had a really hard time affirming him for what he was doing. And yet later on in his life, he said his father learned how to do that. It was amazing how his relationship with his father improved over time. But I think that's pretty common for a lot, not just India, but everywhere. I'm not sure that human fathers and mothers really understand that balance of affirmation and correction. And yet our Heavenly Father understands that, doesn't he?
He does. And, you know, I keep going back to Zacchaeus.
Hmm.
When Jesus saw this man who was so despised by the Jews, and yet he looked right at him and said, Zacchaeus, come down, I'm coming to your house today. I mean, what a statement of affirmation. And, you know, I have to constantly try and do this with my children because I'm always looking, you know, somehow the mistakes they make is what is magnified in my eyes other than, you know, patting them on the back just for the effort.
Wow.
Doesn't necessarily mean that they've done a good job at something, mm-hmm. but the fact that they made the effort to do something.
Yeah.
Like when my 3-year-old pulls open the drawer of cutlery and goes and tries and sets the table with 20 spoons, and there are just 4 of us in the family, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of me, my natural instinct is to say, no, we just need 4 spoons, 4 forks, 4 knives, but to go beyond that and say, you did a good job. Thank you for taking care of that for mommy.
Well, I think that's the kind of encouragement our children need. One of the lines that we use in our family is direction, not perfection. That is, we just want to see a direction here. You know, we want to see a trajectory in a good direction. And we just want to encourage that and shepherd that along. And we're just not expecting perfection. You know, it's hard to expect it out of ourselves, let alone out of our children.
So true. And that's something that's becoming more and more obvious to me as my older girl hits the teen years, that it's all about direction and not perfection. And it's all about affirming.
Yes, exactly. Well, you know, as we think about homeschooling moms, as moms are with their children, they get that opportunity to talk about the most important things of all, which is matters of faith and salvation. And you talked about in your introduction to the book how that's a really scary responsibility. You know? I mean, here we are, little moms and dads, talking about the really big things with our children. How do you get past that fear?
Just realizing that God has entrusted us with these precious children. And, you know, again, what He calls us to do, He will empower us and equip us for.
And we don't get a practice run at this, do we?
No, we don't, which is why I'm so grateful for the cross.
You're right.
And I think part of it, too, Kevin, is just being able to bring biblical values into daily living. You know, Deuteronomy talks about, you know, talk with them as you walk down the streets, as you sit down, no matter where you are, just constantly bringing them back to the gospel, to Jesus. How does following Jesus look in this situation, you know, when someone's mean to you?
The really nice thing about this, Anita, is that, you know, God gives you more than 5 minutes to accomplish this. I mean, you know, we do get a lot of time, you know, and when it's an everyday sort of affair where every single day our children are there with us as we sit in the house, as we walk by the way, as we rise up, as we lie down, that is a tremendous opportunity. It gives us opportunity to make some mistakes too, as we just mentioned, and an opportunity to correct for those mistakes. But we do have that time, and the idea that somehow your children are going to have that faith, they're going to be at that level, they're going to repent of all their sins by the time they're 2.5 years old is sort of bogus. You know, this is a process where we're going to work on this. And I think if people understand that alleviates a lot of pressure. We've got time to work through this.
That's true. And, you know, I think, you know, I kind of fell into the trap of expecting really a lot out of my first child.
Yes.
And then when the second came along, I was like, oh, I can learn from some of my mistakes. And the first one is like now is like, well, that's so not fair. You never ever let me do that. But, you know, it's part of learning. It's part of growing. And it's part of being vulnerable as well to them and to God.
You talk about some intangible gifts that we give to our children in your book, School is Where the Home Is. What are the intangible gifts? What are the things that we can give to them beyond the material?
For me, Kevin, that came as another big epiphany because when I started out homeschooling, it was all about the academics, simply because of my Indian background with its high value on education.
Sure.
And when I realized that was just a small part of God's whole big picture of homeschooling, this whole thing about intangible gifts became a huge deal in our home, and that's what we value. It's basically, you know, leading them, pointing them to Jesus, it's discipling their hearts, nurturing them, encouraging them in spiritual discipline. Because again, I talk about this in the book, that I come from a wonderful spiritual heritage, and the fact that you know, when I woke up in the morning, I'd see my father with his Bible, and the same thing at night. We always had devotions as a family, and the same thing with my grandparents. But it's those memories that have also encouraged me and helped me hunger and thirst more for the Lord. And that's what I talk about in the book in terms of intangible gifts.
Now, some people, and I think you include this in your book, you talk about some of the resistance that you received as you launched out into home educating your children, but inevitably, it seems to me, we get some disapproval from others. How do we deal with that? If you've got, let's say, a father-in-law or a mother-in-law who's a superintendent of a public school, and they're just really resistant to what you're doing as you homeschool your children, how do you deal with that? How do you deal with them?
Oh, you know, Kevin, each case is so individual, and my first reaction is just pray. Ask the Lord for wisdom and discernment about what to say and when to say. Sometimes it's just better to keep quiet.
Yeah.
And that's so hard to do, though, because on our own we want to defend our decisions. We want to justify ourselves. But sometimes the best path is just keeping quiet. And I found that for myself, especially when I met up with friends in India who were principles of good schools and did not understand one bit why I was homeschooling. Sometimes just a general explanation of why we homeschool is all that's needed, and there's no need to get into an argument. And once I even found that when someone asked me, why are you doing this to your child, my response was, and I think it was a God thing, it just popped out of my voice, out of my mouth, because God told us to. And that person looked at me and her eyes grew wide and she was like, oh, and that was the end of the story.
And it is true that some things or some folks are directed towards homeschooling, some are not directed towards homeschooling, depending on all of the various factors that face those families and those parents. We believe that it's been very, very effective for us, especially as bringing in a Christian discipleship and rooting the ideas in a biblical worldview and such. It can be a great way in which to accomplish a good education for a child. But there are so many other ways in which we can adapt this and that and so forth to create a godly education. We have to be careful that we don't just impose it on everybody. And so I think these are wise words. These are wise words. And your idea of holding back and, you know, not just coming out and defending yourself and throwing all of Dr. Brian Ray's studies in their face. And, you know, you've got to be careful about some of that as well, don't you?
Yeah, it doesn't mean that I don't want to.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, these are wise words, and we appreciate what you've had to share today. But just a drop in the bucket compared to what's in Anita's new book, School is Where the Home Is, available online. So this is just brand new, off the press. The print has just barely dried, available at Amazon.com and some of the other booksellers online. The book, School is Where the Home Is, 180 Devotions for Parents, the author, Anita Mellett. Thank you so much, Anita, for joining us today on the Generations Broadcast.
Thanks so much for having me, Kevin.
All right, my friends, you have been listening to the Generations Radio Broadcast. I hope you find these broadcasts stimulating, challenging, and encouraging. We want to encourage you in this life of faith, however God is leading you, using, of course, the vision of His Word in the process. You can interact with the program by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. You can also hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.